Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. When Houston area technology professional Benny Prince began researching his Arklatex roots, he had no idea he would meet a character literally larger than life. James Wesley Big Jim Patterson, Prince's great uncle, stood out in the family story as much as his reported 8-foot-4-inch height stood out among residents of Bloomberg, Texas, where he died on Halloween 1920. A trove of heirloom documents, including rare vintage photos, told Prince the tale of Patterson's life as a circus sideshow performer, businessman, and member of a family that played an important role in the history of Cass County. Now Prince is working on a book about Big Jim and hopes someone out there can tell him even more about the giant billed by the Sells Brothers Circus as the world's tallest man. Here's my conversation with researcher and author Benny Prince. Good morning and welcome. Thanks for taking a little time to talk to us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me on, Carl. Appreciate it.
Our listeners have told us they're really interested in hearing more about local history, and you've got quite a story to tell under that heading. So let's just jump right in. Who was Big Jim Patterson, and how did you first find out about him?
So Big Jim would be, to me, he'd be my great uncle, and how I found out about him. My grandmother was adopted out of the family in 1924, and I started doing the genealogy research, and, you know, he jumped out as the first really interesting character. I guess a lot of stories have been written about him in the local papers. He was a circus performer. He was the world's tallest man and tallest woman and an African wild man.
Wow.
For the Sells Brothers Circus. Yeah, he was a jack of all trades.
The triple threat.
Yeah, and he also owned menagerie animals. I guess he owned a couple of horses. He owned a really cool gorilla. It was an albino gorilla, supposedly one of the only ones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He could do all the tricks. He could do trapeze. He could do pretty much anything a circus performer could do, allegedly. But yeah, his story jumped out at me at first because there were a lot of pictures online. You know, I found several stories written about him. Yeah, so that's how I kind of discovered him a year and a half ago, I guess.
Just so people understand, I read he was born in Sevier County, Arkansas, died in Bloomberg in Cass County, Texas, and is buried in the Bright Star Cemetery in Miller County, Arkansas. Is all that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And there's an interesting story about his gravesite. There's a fence now built around, you know, his tombstone and his parents and some of the relatives. And when they went to fence in, you know, the gravesites, they made it too short, so his feet actually stick out.
Wow.
Of that little enclosed area. But yeah, they came to Texas in, I want to say, 1853, you know, when Texas was giving out all the land grants.
1853, to be clear.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 1853, mm-hmm. Yeah. So his dad, James Marvin, who was a reverend and a mason in the area, he relocated the family to Bright Star in Arkansas, which is about 10 miles away, I guess,
mm-hmm.
Across the border. And they lived there, I guess, 20 or 30 years before they came back to Bloomberg. The railroad went in 1895, and then all the businesses started, you know, sprouting up around that. And by that time, he had retired from the circus. He was getting older, so, you know, he owned businesses with his brothers and you know, his nephews and things like that.
How tall was he?
So that's, you know, I'm finding that's a little debatable. Everyone says he was, or everyone local says he was 8'4", which he's not listed on, you know, any of the Guinness records or any of the anything you find online. He would have been the fifth or sixth tallest person in the U.S. to ever live at 8'4".
Wow.
However, the obituary stayed a little something different. So his obituary was actually printed, San Francisco, on the East Coast, in the Midwest. It was printed in quite a few places stating he was 7'5".
Okay.
So
that's a pretty big range.
Yeah, it's a big range. That's one of the things I'd like to find out is, you know, was he actually 8'4"? Was he closer to 7'5"? I mean, either way, he was really tall, but yeah. And if he is 8'4", we'd like to, you know, see him recognized as being one of the tallest men to ever live. Even at 7'5", he would make the top 50 probably, but he'd be up there.
Certainly big enough to be impressive and to be a draw in show business.
For sure, yeah, yeah. When they made the Australian, so Sells Brothers made a trip to Australia.
The Sells Brothers Circus, correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sorry. Sells Brothers Circus made a worldwide tour, but it was mainly Australia, and they called him the Great U.S. Giant. Hmm. Was there, and apparently, according to his letters, the press really hounded him. He didn't have a lot of good things to say about reporters and things in Australia. Wow.
So was there ever any medical diagnosis that explained how big he was?
No. You know, he lived to be 73 years old.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. It seems like, you know, Robert Wadlow, who was the tallest person ever recorded, at I think I read 8'11". He died in his 20s.
Right.
It seems like these things usually come with health problems, but Big Jim lived to... What did you say, 73?
73. Apparently, he was a really good athlete, a good dancer, very talented and nimble for his size. And he was good looking, too. Again, he was the world's tallest woman for Sells Brothers Circus as a fill-in at the time.
So tell me about that. They would just put him in a dress?
Yeah. So I have several pictures of him in a couple of different dresses, which in his letters, he complained about how much they cost because he had to get them custom made.
Oh, wow.
At the time, I guess they were about $3,000 or so.
Oh, wow.
In today's money. But yeah, we've got several pictures of him in dresses. We've got one picture of him in the African wild man suit. Apparently, they would put him in a cage and he would, rattle the cage and growl at people and things like that, which being as tall as he is was probably pretty scary.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But apparently, he was a good looking guy. He had really pretty hands. He could pass as a woman when he put a wig on. The pictures I have of him, he's not even wearing a wig.
I think a lot of people would assume sideshow performers like that were exploited, that they were sort of victimized by these circus impresarios. But that doesn't seem to be the case with him. You found he actually had a piece of the business, correct?
Yes, he did. And apparently all the, the sideshow, quote unquote, freaks, as they called themselves, they did really well signing autographs. You know, so they got their salary on a weekly, monthly basis, whatever it was. And then as their side hustle, they'd take pictures, sign autographs and things like that, which is where they made their real money. But they weren't hurting. One of the letters talks about, and I have a cabinet card of, it's called the Great Clock of Columbus. It was a clock built in Columbus. Now, the Sells Brothers Circus made their off-season home in Columbus in a place called Sellsville, which is right in the heart of, Columbus, Ohio. Well, on the back of this cabinet card, there are coordinates and the price he paid. It was basically a recording of a deed of land he'd bought in Kansas, traveling by train from Texas up to Ohio.
Oh. So as he traveled, he would just look for business opportunities and buy land.
Apparently, he had land all over the U.S. from his travels.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Well, he definitely wasn't hurting for money. I mean, if you translate the numbers, he was making, at his height at the height of his career, around $15,000 a week.
Wow.
So imagine that.
Yeah, I'm in the wrong line of work.
Yeah, we both are.
So this is all taking place in the 1890s, correct?
Well, between, I don't know when he started exactly with the Sells Brothers Circus. But, most of the information I have is from 1890, 91 in that area when they made the Australia trip. A lot of the letters and things reference or were written from Australia or about that tour.
This is a time we've now almost forgotten when circuses were a real major form of entertainment. What have you learned about that part of American culture, the circus life?
Well, it was the only form of entertainment. It was before, pictures, movies. There wasn't really, especially in these small towns, there was just nothing else to do, right?
Right.
So when the circus came to town, it was a huge deal. I've done some circus history, research, not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But his, when he was performing, it was definitely the golden age before movies and before, people kind of frowned on how the animals were treated, how some of the sideshow performers were treated. He was a rock star when he came home. I've got pictures of him posing with families, and, apparently he would sign autographs for people. They would just come up to him and, they knew him. Of course, being as tall as he was probably very easily recognizable.
Yeah, a real local celebrity, sounds like. A gentle giant is a cliche, but it seems to really have applied to him.
Yeah. There's several stories written about how when he would come home, he would bring gifts for his nieces and nephews, or he would go down to Jefferson maybe and get a case of oysters for a birthday. But one of the big ones, one year he brought home or had shipped home, I think it was three of the old organs. Organs or piano. It wasn't quite a piano, right?
Right.
And he gave one to, I guess, his three nieces. And those weren't cheap back in the day.
But
he was very generous. He would help people with their businesses. He'd give loans. Apparently he was just, a real nice, lighthearted guy that liked to help people out.
He never married himself and never had children, correct?
He never married, yeah. He never had any children, so his nieces and nephews he treated like his children.
All the latest news and more is always right at hand with the Texarkana Gazette mobile app. Updates and breaking news alerts throughout the day keep you up to speed on everything happening in Texarkana and beyond. There's even a daily digital replica of our print edition. All the features you love, like puzzles and our special sections, are right there. It's like having the whole paper in your pocket or purse. Best of all, it's free to download. Look for the Texarkana Gazette app in Google Play or the Apple App Store today. So tell me more about the Patterson family. I gather they played a very important role in Cass County history.
Yes. So when they moved back to Bloomberg from Bright Star, kind of the early 1890s, his nephew, George W., he started the cotton warehouse.
Hmm.
So he was, he was the last cotton broker out of Texas, I guess, at the time.
Oh, wow.
On the Kansas City Southern Railway, yeah. And then later, they started a bank, the Bloomberg State Bank. Him and Big Jim, and then GW's son, who would be my great-grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely had a, they played a big role in the establishment of Bloomberg, for sure.
Do you still have family members up here in the Ark-La-Tex? You want to say hello to anybody?
Well, this kind of journey ended was, well, it hasn't ended, obviously, but I guess the climax was I found the relative, the cousin. Her name's Peggy Hensley. Thank you, Peggy. She had the Patterson Civil War chest. Now, the chest was gone, and apparently it had been through a few fires. But she had a lot of the letters, a lot of the photographs, a lot of the tintypes. And she actually, I went up there to the Atlanta Library,
mm-hmm.
and she came and met me and handed the box over to me with all these letters, pictures. And she didn't give them to me, just, let me borrow them to research. And that just, wow. After seeing the pictures and the letters, how could you not want to tell those stories?
What else was in this chest?
there wasn't, you know, there wasn't a lot left. Some of the cabinet cards that I have photocopies of were gone, like some of him, you know, mostly circus photos, but it was mainly tintypes, cabinet cards and letters. And I think the one of the coolest things is a tintype of Cullen Baker, which, you know, since there are no known photos of him.
Now, remind people who he was.
Cullen Baker was, there were a bunch of different stories about him, but he was a Confederate soldier, and he left the Confederacy and started, I guess he was one of Quantrill's guys for a while, and then he started his own kind of guerrilla group called the Independent Rangers, and they operated in Northeast Texas and Louisiana, and he was really notorious. There have been 5 or 6 books written about him. Louis L'Amour wrote a book about him and kind of glamorized him as a gunfighter.
Yeah.
There's been one movie made about him. It was in Mexico. Never a movie here.
Interesting.
And yeah, he's real controversial. You know, Cass County or Bloomberg had the Cullen Baker Country Fair every year up until COVID in 2020. So it ran from 1973, I believe, to 2020. To 2019, I guess, officially.
Yeah. But you started to say you found a photograph of him.
Well, it's a tintype, and he's holding a pistol. You know, I had the Cass County Genealogy Society do some research on it, and they think it's him. I've reached out to some of the auction houses that specialize in, you know, old tintypes, old photos, just to try to get it authenticated. And, you know, it's going to be hard because there are no known photos of him. So all we have, the main clue is the pistol he's holding. It was an 1848 Colt, but it was a one-off, and it was only produced for Confederate soldiers. Hmm. And that's the pistol he's holding, and apparently he was left-handed, and in the picture he's holding the pistol in his left hand.
Wow, those are some intriguing clues.
But again, it's going to be really hard to get it officially verified by anyone, unfortunately, but fairly certain it's him.
And tell me about the Patterson Building.
Oh, the Patterson Building. Yeah. So it was GW, my great-grandfather, owned the land that it's built on. I believe it's lot 25 in Bloomberg, or block 25, lot 14, I believe. But him and his brothers, or at least one other brother, and there's a newspaper article stating that he was the one building the building. It was called the Patterson Building. It's the 3-story building in Bloomberg that still stands. Don't know for how much longer.
Right.
But the first floor was the bank. Second floor was the communications office for the Kansas City Southern, where my great-grandfather worked as a telegraph operator, apparently. And then the third floor was for the Masons meetings. So it was essentially the Masonic Lodge.
Interesting. So you're putting all the stuff that you've learned into a book. I saw on your Kickstarter page, you call it fictional history. What does that mean?
Well, you know, it's hard. If you write it as, you know, actual nonfiction history, it's more of, you know, everything should be documented pretty thoroughly, right?
Right.
So fictional history, you're allowed a little more indulgent,
right?
I should say, based on, you know, stories and versus things that are documented. So, you know, there will be some of that, but of course, I'll try to, you know, keep it as accurate to what I've learned in the facts as possible. But there will be some indulgence, I'm sure.
And the title is
Out of the Borderlands into the Big Top: Adventures of the World's Tallest Man.
Wow, that sounds great. And crowdfunding a self-publication. Why did you choose to go that route rather than the traditional publishing route?
Mostly because I'm not an author by trade. I'm an IT kind of technical guy. Mm-hmm. I didn't really even look at trying to get it published by, you know, a large company or large publisher or anything. I don't know, more just to kind of see the interest and just to get something out there. Yeah, I don't really have, you know, maybe I should have explored going to a publisher more.
Well,
I talked to a couple friends that have self-published books, and, you know, they thought it was a good idea, so I went down that road.
Well, I'll put a link to your Kickstarter page in the description for this episode, so if anybody wants to pitch in.
That would be awesome. I think I've got 2 weeks left before it ends, and, you know, if it doesn't fund all the way, I'll probably either go back to the Kickstarter platform or try a different one or just try to do it myself without any kind of funding. But it's definitely a story I want to get out there for sure. And maybe eventually do a screenplay and a movie, because there are just so many cool things about, you know, the stories, just the stories around his circus adventures, especially.
Well, tell us one or two. What are your favorite anecdotes about Big Jim?
Well, the main one is the albino gorilla that he had, that he absolutely loved, and he taught it to do all these tricks, right? He taught it how to do trapeze. He taught it how to ride dogs and a bike and all these things. Wow. And, I mean, that is so cool. One of the older, stories that was passed down is that when he was in Australia, I'm not sure exactly which royalty was there. I think it was Queen Elizabeth, I think is what's been written, but apparently he sang and danced, you know, with them through the night. It was kind of a party, I guess.
Yeah.
They invited some of the circus people in. The coolest one, though, probably is about the with regards to the treasure wagon. Apparently the quote unquote freaks had their own wagons filled with gold. I forget exactly what gold pieces they were, but essentially gold coins. So when Jim needed to go buy a new dress, he would borrow money from the treasure wagon.
Wow, who knew?
I guess they were doing very well.
So what's left to find out? What's still on your research agenda?
You know, I'm talking to a few circus historians. I'd like to find maybe a poster, some more pictures of him, definitely. Always looking for new stories. I'm planning on going back up to Cass County here in a few months. So the Genealogical Society there invited me to come do a presentation. Just hoping to talk to some of the old timers and just gather as many stories as I can about him and the family.
Yeah, it hasn't, I guess it's been more than 100 years since he died, but that's not that long. There may be people still around here who maybe remember their parents telling them stories about him.
Yeah, for sure. He'd be a cousin. I forget how I found him exactly, but he found an old picture of Big Jim in his family photo album and sent it to me. It was one that, you know, nobody had seen before. And he looks like he's dressed like Annie Oakley. He's got a wig on with long hair. And yeah, it's an interesting photo. Most of the photos of him are very interesting. Yeah. It doesn't seem like he ever took a photo of just of him being him. He had some kind of costume or outfit on.
A performer.
He was definitely a performer. He was the consummate performer, apparently.
So if someone hears this or reads a story in the paper and wants to get in touch with you with some more information, how would they do that?
Email's good. Yeah, it's benny.prince, BENNY.PRINCE, at gmail.com.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if you hear from some people.
I would love to. I really love hearing these old stories. You know, I didn't grow up around them. I didn't grow up in Cass County. I didn't grow up, you know, I didn't get to hear them all. So hearing them now in my 50s is just amazing.
And you're an active member in the Cass County Genealogical Society now, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I've contributed. They have Cass County Cousins section that Evan Evans there does. By the way, the Cass County Genealogical Society is amazing. They have stuff from not only Cass County, but from Miller County in Arkansas. They consider Bright Star in that area kind of part of Cass County with regards to genealogy, because so many people kind of move back and forth.
Right.
So when the railroad came through Bloomberg, it killed Bright Star, and everybody basically picked up their businesses and moved to Bloomberg. But yeah, they're great. So I've contributed. I've had a few articles published there. yeah, they've been amazing. Well, everyone donate to the Cass County Genealogical Society if you can. They're doing great work.
Well, when you're back up here, let us know, and we'll get the word out. Maybe we can get you in touch with even more people.
That would be great. Yes. We'd love that.
Well, thanks so much for taking a minute to talk to us. This is really interesting. Obviously, one of the more colorful characters in local history, and one I've never heard of before. I think a lot of people will be interested to learn about Big Jim.
Yeah, I think so. I think so for sure. And then hopefully the people that do know about him will learn a lot of new things about him.
Great. Well, thanks again for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck with your project.
Thank you so much, Carl. Thanks for having me on.
On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on The Line.